starters, we're going to move House Bill 2121A to, do you want a specific agenda? We're going to take it off of today's agenda and we'll reschedule it, so, right?
Next week, Madam Chair?
We'll reschedule it.
Because you're going to be in Portland on Friday.
That's right. We'll reschedule it for some time next week. Now we will open a public hearing.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the reason for putting the bill over is there's an amendment due to the Legislative Council's office, and it's not back yet because there have been discussions with the Department of Justice and our Legislative Council's office concerning the language, and the amendment's not ready.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. Now we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2122A. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2122A comes to you at the request of Attorney General Harder Myers for the Department of Justice, allows an agency to delegate authority to enter a final order administrative proceeding to an officer or employee of the agency or class of officer or employee of the agency, requires that the delegation be in writing, and may be before the issuance of the order, requires the agency retain the delegation in its records. Madam Chair, members of the committee, the reason this is before us, in a passing note, in Marshall's Towing versus the Department of State Police, the court pointed out that there was some, shall we say, statutory ambiguity as the ability to who could sign the final order.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. That it?
That's it.
Okay. Christine Shute.
Welcome. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Christine Shute, attorney in charge of the Government Services and Education section of the Oregon Department of Justice, testifying in favor of House Bill 2122A. Mr. Taylor's summary just about says everything there is to say about this bill. The note in Marshall's Towing Company, it was literally that, a footnote, suggested that maybe there wasn't authority for somebody other than the superintendent to sign the final order in this case. Didn't make any holding that there wasn't authority for someone else to sign the order, but we had always thought there was, and that gave us a lot of concern, primarily because many, many, many agency heads delegate authority to folks within their agencies to sign final orders. For example, one person within an agency may have sole or primary responsibility for a particular program, or even if the agency head retains sole or primary responsibility for a program, the agency head may be out of town for a few days and they would like to have someone else who's able to enter those orders so that citizens don't have to wait around until they return. It's not that we think agencies don't have authority, it's that we wanted to clarify that they do. That's what the bill's about.
Okay, and this bill doesn't speak to whether you can have multiple people with authority.
Madam Chair, I think the bill assumes that you can have multiple people with authority, for example, where it says a class of officers or employees. For example, I'll give you an example that's not a good example because the statute already covers it in another way, but for example, if the employment department head wanted to delegate authority for the 18,000 plus orders that come from unemployment claims, it wouldn't be practical to delegate that to a person. It would be needed to be delegated to a class of people within that agency. Now, that authority already is delegated to those folks in another statute, but that's
okay. And this bill makes it clear that if there is other statutory direction, then this would not preempt that.
Madam Chairman, that is correct.
Okay. Any questions for the committee? Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you came to my office and talked to me about this bill, you were going to get a list of agencies that would be affected by it and kind of a deeper explanation of the need, especially the agencies that are dealing with citizens directly, not just rulemaking or something like that, but when you're actually doing something to a citizen.
Madam Chairman and Senator Beyer, when I looked at the agencies, Most of the largest agencies, those with the highest volumes of cases, have specifically come to the legislature and gotten something in their agency statute that says that the agency director can delegate pretty much anything he or she wants to pretty much anybody he or she wants within the agency. And so when I got to looking at it, I realized that the highest volume agencies are already covered within their own organic statutes. And as examples of those, employment departments, one I've already mentioned, the Bureau of Labor and Industries, which hears many, many cases, the Department of Corrections, for example, and Department of Human Services. So right there you've got the largest number of agency orders of people who deal directly with citizens in terms of orders. Those people, those agencies already have authority within their organic statutes. The places where we haven't quite dotted that I and crossed that T in the organic statutes are the medium and smaller agencies. For example, the Oregon State Police with its towing program. Now, they deal directly with citizens there. Another one is the Office of Emergency Management, for example, which deals with a smaller number of citizen, direct citizen. They're mostly dealing government to government. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Close public hearing on House Bill 2122. Open a work session on House Bill 2122. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I'd move House Bill 2122A engrossed to the Senate floor as a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved House Bill 2122A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Beyer, would you like to carry
sure.
this? Okay, now we're going to go a little bit out of order here to accommodate Judge Breithoff. So we will stall for time for a second while we change counsels, and then we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2319. Whenever you're ready, counsel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2319 comes from House Judiciary. The bill requires the Department of Revenue to notify the County Treasurer of high-value appeals. It also specifies that the relevant tax court is the Oregon Tax Court.
Okay, Judge Breithoff is here to join us today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Henry Breithoff, Judge of the Oregon Tax Court. Here today to testify in favor of House Bill 2319. A word of history might help. Prior to 1995, in what I'll call smaller counties that had, let's say, one large plant, if that plant was involved in a property tax dispute, the county would be notified when the amount at issue exceeded 0.25% of total assessed value, a large case was on their hands. And they were directed in those days by statute to only collect tax on the lowest amount, typically what the taxpayer was asserting. In that fashion, the county wouldn't collect the money, spend it, and then if a refund was ordered, have to run around trying to get the refund money. That system was changed to a reporting system that warned counties of the possibility of this occurring. And prior to 1995, that warning responsibility lay with the Department of Revenue. As a result of the statute that created the magistrate division, I think by reason of a global set of changes, that responsibility was shifted to the tax court to notify counties. And while we were happy to do that, as a practical matter, the information we needed to report to the counties came from the Department of Revenue. So we would call the department, get the information, they would send it to us, we would then report it to the counties. We felt that was at least inefficient and talked with the Department of Revenue folks. They agreed that they should be the ones doing this, and this bill, in effect, places back in their hands the responsibility for taking information, which they really have as a matter of course, and, in effect, warning the counties when there's a large property tax dispute that could affect county revenues substantially.
Okay, Judge, does the Department of Revenue, are they comfortable with this responsibility? I don't see them signed up here.
They are not signed up. We met with them at the time that the bill was, we requested that the bill be drafted, and they were quite willing to undertake, or to take back, if you will, that responsibility. As I said, they have maintain regularly the information that's necessary to make these judgments and reports. So our understanding is they are in favor of this bill as well.
Now, tell me how this got to the tax court again. I think you covered that in your testimony. I must have missed it.
I don't know exactly, but I think that what happened is in 1995, when the magistrate division of the court was created, it was necessary to go through Chapter 305, for example, and in a very large number of instances, erase the words Department of Revenue and put in the words Oregon Tax Court.
Hmm.
And I think that in that process, when it got to this reporting statute, the words Department of Revenue were erased and the words Tax Court were filled in. And that placed the reporting responsibility with us. And like I say, the problem with that is we don't have the information. We know there's a dispute because we've got the case. What we don't know is what is the aggregate assessed value of all property in Curry County. And so the reporting responsibility occurs when the amount that's in controversy exceeds, I think it is 0.25% of the total assessed value of a county. Practically speaking, the only time this comes up is when you have a county that has a relatively small tax base, and yet, for example, one large property, for example, there was a sugar beet processing facility in Malheur County, I think it was. Well, if there was a large fight about that valuation, Malheur County could be looking at a plus or minus 1 or 2% move in its revenues.
Mm-hmm. And the Department of Revenue actually finds out about these disputes before the tax court. Is that correct?
They'll find out about them because they will be if the case gets to the tax court, they will know about it. And B, they have, in effect, not only in their records, but I think probably in machine form, if you will, computer form, they have the various base numbers, what the aggregate assessed value of each county is from time to time.
What I'm trying to understand here is if the dispute ends up in your court, do you have a reporting duty to the Department of Revenue of any kind?
If the dispute ends up in the tax court, by statute, we always send a copy of the complaint, whether it's at the magistrate division or if it's at the magistrate division, the department always gets a copy of the complaint. And in any case, in the regular division, by statute, the department is the defendant.
Okay.
So they are always in the position of occupying that responsible role with respect to all of the cases.
Well, being a defendant definitely gets your attention, so I guess we won't have to worry about these things falling through the cracks, will we?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay, thank you, Judge.
Is there any
questions from the committee? Thank you. Okay, I'm going to close. I have nobody else signed up. Anybody else want to talk on this? Close the public hearing on House Bill 2319. Open a work session on House Bill 2319. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2319 to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved House Bill 2319 to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. I will carry this bill. Okay, now we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2316. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2316 comes from House Judiciary. The bill authorizes small claims Department of Circuit Courts to hear actions where the amount or value claimed in the action does not exceed $7,500.
Okay, we have Jim Marquis and Cindy Roberts signed up. Oh, got the whole crowd here.
Chair, members of the committee, with your permission, we thought we'd all come up together and save you a little.
That's great. Sybil forgot to sign up.
I did. Thank you, Chair. I apologize.
But you're always welcome.
House Bill 2316 comes to you from the House Judiciary Committee. It was introduced at the request of the Oregon Collectors Association, my client, and at the request of the National Association of Credit Managers, Cindy's client. The bill would simply raise the jurisdiction.
You need to identify yourself.
I'm sorry. I'm Jim Marquis, representing the Oregon Collectors Association. Sorry. forgive me, I'm kind of new at this. So.
You should know better by now. My goodness.
I gave you some written testimony, and I also attached a brief history of where the jurisdictional limits of small claims have been over the course of time. Every circuit court in the state has a small claims department that hears minor kinds of things and credit kinds of things, and it's a great little way to alleviate time and effort from the circuit courts. For creditors that I represent pursuing debts which have become delinquent, small claims court offers an inexpensive and expedient means to pursue those legal actions that sometimes, unfortunately, become necessary. It is a good thing for creditors because it's fast and easy and doesn't require lawyers. It also happens to be a good thing for debtors because it's much less expensive than going to circuit court, no attorney fees involved, lower filing fees, and ample opportunity to defend themselves. Any defendant that doesn't like being in small claims court always has the option to ask to have it moved up to circuit court, and that option is always available to them. For the courts, we believe it's good because it alleviates congestion in the circuit court. Been 8 years since it's been increased. We're lower than most of our surrounding states in terms of the jurisdictional limits. This bill would raise them from 5,000 to 7,500. We think that's appropriate at this time. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
I think I've been around too long since I was on this committee the last time it was increased.
Yeah.
Are there questions from the committee? Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert, and I represent the National Association of Credit Management. We are an association that serves businesses around Oregon, Idaho, and Washington with their credit management. We support this bill. We are excited about this bill because it does increase the ability for people to go to small claims court. It's a simple venue and it allows people to take into their own hands their legal issues. I have included in my testimony to you a listing of the surrounding states that Jim alluded to and at what price you can go for small claims limitations there. And we urge you to support this because it does make courts more accessible, and it certainly uncrowds the courts that are easier to be done without lawyers and long dockets.
Okay, thank you. Questions?
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, Sybil Hebb for the Oregon Law Center, and thank you for allowing me to come up today, even though I forgot to sign up. I apologize for that. I just wanted to offer my support as a representative of the Oregon Law Center. As you all know, our mission is to achieve access to justice for low-income people. We're unfortunately unable to serve all of the people who qualify for our services because we have a lack of resources, and so the establishment of systems such as the small claims court that are set up to help people who don't have attorneys and who are representing themselves is of great interest to us. Our clients have good things to say about the small claims court. They generally tell us that they think it's fair and they achieve good resolution, and we agree there is an ability for people to remove cases into the circuit court if they feel that they would like that access. And so we like it. We think it works really well, and we're supportive of the bill increasing the jurisdiction.
Thank you very much. Senator Barr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And no one spoke to it, so I guess I'll ask the question. In Section 7 of the bill, and in the Notice of Domestic Violence, the limit's currently 3,500 instead of 5,000, and this would make it the same as the rest of the statute. Is there a reason it was left at 3,500 in the last change?
I can speak to that, Senator Beyer, and I apologize, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. I should have addressed that, and it was a question that came up on the House side as well, so I apologize. Essentially, I think it was an error last time the jurisdictional level was raised. It didn't get the cross-reference in the domestic violence notice statute didn't get noticed, and so then the jurisdictional level wasn't corrected the last time this bill raised the jurisdictional level of small claims court, and so Legislative Council caught that this time and made sure that it's consistent. So it's not a substantive change.
So just to be clear, you're saying the chair made an error in 99?
Not at all, sir.
The chair, for the record, was a mere peon.
Madam Chair and Senator Beyer, I accept full responsibility for that 1999 error. I was here.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I could, Jim Markey on behalf of the Oregon Collectors Association. Again, Harlan Levy from the Oregon Realtors Association wanted it put on the record that they support the bill. He couldn't be here because of a conflict. And I did speak with Kingsley Click, and the Judicial Department is neutral on the bill, so has no problem.
I see a head nod from Ms. Click in the back of the room. So, okay, anything else to add? Other questions?
I just want to grab you with the chair.
It was Neil Bryan.
Yeah.
And that was my first year on judiciary, and I've been perfect ever since, Senator Byron.
I'll keep track of that.
And I will do the same, Senator Byron. Okay, we'll close a public hearing on House Bill 2316 and open a work session on House Bill 2316. Senator Byron.
House Bill 2316 to the Senate floor for a due-pass recommendation, with a due-pass recommendation. And for the record, I wasn't on judiciary in 99.
Senator Beyer was in the House in 99. That was a memorable year. Senator Beyer has moved House Bill 2316 in the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Walker, you just got here, but would you like to carry this bill raising the claim jurisdiction for
small claims court.
Do I recall this was interesting to you? I'd be happy to carry it if you don't want
to. No, it was, and the collectors agree with this bill.
Yeah, absolutely.
It
okay.
Well,
it's all yours, Senator Walker. I was going to take it, and then you came in, and now it's yours.
Thanks.
Okay.
There's a lot of bills being held for hearings these days, so we have to be in many places at once.
Many, many places. Okay, open a public hearing on House Bill 2321. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2321 comes from the House Judiciary. The bill increases the driver's license suspension to 10 years when it was suspended because the driver failed to appear for a traffic-related court proceeding, failed to pay a fine, or to obey a court order.
Okay, we have signed up Cheryl Stone. Judicial Department. Welcome.
Cheryl Stone from the Oregon Judicial Department. House Bill 2321 was introduced by the Judicial Department at the Judicial Department's request. It corrects the link between the driver's license renewal period and the maximum amount of time allowable for license suspension on traffic offenses. The bill lengthens the period to 10 years for the license suspension period when someone has failed to pay their court-ordered fines or failed to appear for court on a traffic offense. Some time ago, the Oregon driver's license were issued for four-year terms, and now they're issued for eight-year terms. In the process of changing that, the license suspension period was not extended. It was remained the same at 5 years. The court has issues driver's license suspensions when someone fails to appear for their court appearance or if someone fails to be compliant with the payment agreement that they have made with the court. And so you'll see I attached a diagram that shows kind of the impact. It's possible today for someone to receive a license sanction and have their that license sanction to expire and have their driver's license renewed without paying their traffic offense to the court. And with this change in the law, it will extend that period of time so when they go to renew their driver's license, they will be reminded that they have an unpaid obligation with the circuit court.
Madam Chair.
Senator Przanski.
I believe I understand how the bill actually is going to work. I looked at the summary, and I was concerned when I first just read the tagline to it. So let's just put some stuff on the record. So my understanding is basically what this bill will do will increase the length of time that the suspension would be in effect up to 10 years. If someone goes and pays their fines and their costs to the court prior to that time, they will then be eligible to have their license reinstated, paying whatever fees they have to pay through DMV. Is that correct?
Chair Burdick, Senator Prusansky, that is correct. The court also has several opportunities to get your license back if you enter into a payment agreement and are compliant with that. So you don't necessarily have to pay your fees or fines in total. You can enter into some other agreement to get your driver's license back.
And one other follow-up.
Please.
So the bottom line is that all we're doing is giving the court the ability to, let's say, have the long arm of justice out there for 10 years to make certain that someone who's been found guilty of whatever it may be pays their fees or fines, or they have failed to appear on the original citation, that they can keep the suspension in place up to 10 years as to compare to now, which is only 5 years.
Chair Burdick, Senator Prusansky is correct.
All right, thank you.
Thank you for getting that on the record, because it took me a minute to understand it, too, but as I'm looking at this, basically the enforcement mechanism before was renewal. In other words, they wouldn't renew the license until the fines were paid. Is that correct?
Chair, that is part of the enforcement, yes. A driver's license suspension is one of the most effective tools we have in getting traffic fines paid. And the ability to renew your driver's license by paying your fees but not having to pay your court fees kind of prohibits that process. So this would make sure that the driver's license suspension was a long enough period of time that they could not renew their driver's license without paying their fines.
Okay, and what about the court fees?
On the traffic, this only impacts traffic offenses, so this would be on traffic fines and assessments that are associated with a traffic offense. So all of those amounts that are paid to the circuit court are impacted for traffic offenses.
It could also be municipal courts or JP courts.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Senator Beyer.
When a court orders a suspension for this, do they notify DMV so DMV has it on record?
Chair Burdick, Senator Beyer, yes. We have an automated process to notify DMV of a sanction, and then 60 days after notification to DMV, the license is actually suspended.
Okay, so I mean, it seems to me that with the now we're going to central issues of driver's license, so you're not going to have a situation where in a field office someplace DMV can be issuing a driver's license because they don't know about a suspension, because they're all going to be happening at a central issuance. So I just wonder how, you know, whether or not this logic that you can miss them now is valid, because they're all centrally issued. They're not, and I just.
Madam Chair, I think the difference is now that you can, your license, driver's license is renewed for 8 years, where you only have 5 years on the length of time the court can have it in play. You can run out that 5 years unless it's renewed, and I don't think there's some courts I think can renew them. There's a process there. This is just going to say we're going to give it 10 years, so no matter where you're at in your cycle for getting your license renewed, we know that at some point you're going to have to go before DMV to get your license renewed before the 10 years would run on the length of the suspension. Now, I was very concerned first. I thought it just meant automatically you're going to get a 10-year suspension. Which is not really what we want to do.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2321. Open a work session on House Bill 2321. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2321 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved House Bill 2321 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Prusansky.
I'll carry it.
Yes. Okay, that's our agenda. Our committee, since we have a couple extra minutes, just remind you that we have our out-of-town meeting on Friday at Lewis and Clark College Law School. And it'll start at 10 o'clock, and we will have a work session on Senate Bill 571, and we will have public hearings on two animal-related bills to allow faculty and students in the animal law section at Lewis and Clark to participate, and others, if they're interested.
Madam Chair, regarding our travel plans and all that, is there going to be a vehicle for those who are here wanting to go up and come back, or are we on our own? And if so, how are we going to deal with the parking? I assume it's at the law school, not at the main campus.
It is at the law school, Senator Prusansky. And our fabulous staff will be working on logistics, and your chair is here to serve with rides, lodging, whatever it takes. Okay, we are adjourned.
I don't remember just now the things.